Do you want your advert at the start of every episode of the Marketing Rules podcast? We're always looking to work with new sponsors. So if you'd like a copy of our sponsorship pack, email podcast@thinkincircles.com. And now on with the latest episode.
What great ideas are so close within your grasp? Seeing other points of view, anticipating change, considering multiple possible turnouts, acknowledging uncertainty, searching for compromise. We're going to talk about how to get over those limiters of innovation so that you can extract better thinking from yourself and your team. So let's talk about how to win the future.
Welcome to the Marketing Rules podcast from Think in Circles with me, your host, James Whitelock. As a recruiter marketeer, I would say that marketing is important in talent attraction. But today's guest has marketing front and center in his strategy. Joining me this week is David Nottage, Head of Talent Attraction and Acquisition at Foot Asylum. David talks me through his unusual journey into talent attraction, why marketing is so important to him, and his thoughts on how TA teams should be adding value. Welcome back, everybody, to the Marketing Rules podcast. And it is my pleasure to welcome on board David Nottage. Now, David, I know you as the talent acquisition kind of guru from Foot Asylum, but I know you've got a pretty interesting background as well. So for the kind of listeners today, maybe you can kind of give us a little kind of potted history about your background and how you got into kind of talent acquisition in the first place.
Yeah, so... So thank you, and hello to everyone. My background is kind of weird. So when I left school, I went to a school in Chester. I had different kind of options. I was good at a range of sports. But the option that came my way the option that I chose was football. So I became a professional footballer. Signed a YTS.
You can't just go, I became a professional footballer, because it's not that easy just to become a professional footballer.
Sure. Well, actually I first became an apprentice. So I did a YTS. So those of people that are old enough to know what a YTS is, it was a youth training scheme, which is essentially a government backed apprenticeship. So my first salary, when everyone else was earning fortunes and I was a footballer thinking I was going to go and earn loads, my first salary was £42.50 a week. And that was from the space. My birthday's in April, so I had to wait all the way until I was 17 before I signed on a pro. But I did that, and I played football. I had a career that was very up and down. Went to some big clubs, went to some small clubs, you know, just like a kind of the journey of a player that was talented but not quite good enough. So whilst I was playing, when I was 24, I got a move to a big club, quickly established there that I just wasn't going to be good enough. I could tell, like, the consistency, commitment, everything just from people was there. And I didn't really like football anyway. Like, it was a genuine, it's a role where you never have genuine friendships or relationships with anybody. You never know where you're going to be living in 6 months' time. Are living in hotels generally most of the time anyway. And there is a lack of security that comes with that. And my childhood was kind of quite broken. So I always say that I chose football because someone came along and said, we'll give you this bump of money if you sign. So for me, I'd never seen like £5,000 before, and someone put £5,000 in my account, and it was like an amazing like thing to see. And so that's the kind of choice I made. If I could go back, I probably would have gone maybe the athletics or rugby route, because I was excelling in a range of different sports and had different options to go. But so I got to 24 and I was like, right, what do I really want to do? My mum's a genetic scientist. So education was always really important in our household. So I'd kept doing A-levels whilst I was playing. So I got an A-level in law, psychology, sociology and maths. So I was like, how many more A-levels can I do? Like, this is ridiculous. So I decided to do a degree. I did a degree in business and PR and marketing. So those three. I got a first in that, and then I did a master's. So I got to the end of that. My career was just, I was just really unhappy. And I was a sponsored athlete for Adidas, and I was filming an advert for them in Valencia. And the marketing director was coming past, and was a bit nerdy. I taught myself to like code. So it'll show how old I am again. I did it in Dreamweaver. If anyone's a coder and understands like that.
That's a deep cut. That's an old school kind of programming.
So I was using that. Like obviously I've done things now in like JavaScript and in WordPress and everything. Everything's still so easy, but at the time it was quite complex. So I taught myself to code. So I had all these like range of skills. I was always really interested in tech anyway. And I thought, look, I'm just going to ask the marketing director if he'd be interested in, or if there's an opportunity for me. He said yes. And I flew back to England on a Thursday, turned down a football contract on the Friday, and then moved to London the following Wednesday to start working at Adidas in marketing. And that was a range of, it was an interesting role. I think with them bringing me in, they weren't even quite sure necessarily where I would sit. So I sat in the, technically I was in the influencer department where I was getting to do a lot of digital marketing as well. So things like social, looking at like PPC and little bits and bobs like that. Basic kind of digital marketing, but we're talking like 12 years ago. So it wasn't like so prevalent. We were more kind of like finessing really the brand into what we were considering to be digital channels. Obviously now it's way more complex and thought through, but at the time it wasn't. So I did that for a little bit. One of my family members had a brain hemorrhage. I had to come back up north just to support with that. So I was at this crossroads really, because I was sat and I was saying to myself, well, I'm 28 years old. I've got around nine months experience working in marketing, but I'm not really probably a good option for people. So for me, I was like, what can I do to expedite my career as quickly as possible? I had options from the BBC to go be a developer. I had some other options with different marketing brands, McCann's and agency and stuff like that. One of my friends was working in agency recruitment and said, look, with your experience and whatever, I think you'd be really well suited to this. So I went to speak to his company. It was like Wolf of Wall Street. So I just wasn't interested. Like if you can see the leaders of that business that I won't say who they are, but I went to the business and they were the guys that went through the difficult times in the 2000s to then they had a model and it was very like bash the phones, work hard, play hard and all the rest of it. And I was like, okay, well, I'm definitely not going to go here, but I'm interested in brands where I can really expedite my skills and learn as much as I can as quickly as possible in short space of time. Because I always felt that I was 10 years behind everybody else. Mm-hmm. So I chose the company that I went to was Badenoch & Clark, great reputation, good track record of developing people. And I was really lucky, I guess, with like my manager as well. Like he allowed me to change the way that I was working. I said I was going to focus specifically on digital acquisition and candidate journey rather than necessarily the traditional model, which was very client-led at the time. And then when you had all the jobs on, then you would go to your candidates and feed it in. We'd have like huge databases, eShot out, and you know, like the traditional kind of agency model. And I think my friends all say to me, I'm like a cat because I always seem to be lucky and land on my feet. But like, I just think I was the right person at the right time with the right model for the way that things were changing. Got a reputation quickly, became a really successful biller in that business, then moved to a range of different other agencies doing really, I guess, kind of like I got a reputation for going and sorting places out if they were struggling or looking to modernize. One of the businesses I worked for, I had a team in Holland, Germany and Dubai. And then we did some other stuff around kind of Houston and Canada as well. So that was good because it was like a global role and I had like teams doing multiple things. And then the last role that I had in agency side was like, it wasn't just to manage some agency teams, which there was multiple teams that were sat in it, but also it was to kind of bring the business forward, which introduced me really to HR more. Mm-hmm. So they were amazing, like helped support me with getting some HR qualifications and exposing me to, I guess, kind of like the operational people side of things. So I wasn't necessarily looking for a role at in internal or anything. Obviously internal can't really pale to the salaries that you get within agency just based on the nature of the role. Like we're in TA, we're a cost saving mechanism, you know, we're not an acquisition making mechanism. So I went in to have a chat. The old HR director at Foot Asylum, Jane, she was looking for someone who had a good balance of marketing, someone who understood like how to communicate with people effectively that they don't know or see, and then also build the employer brand and then the talent acquisition function from scratch. So when I got in at Foot Asylum, obviously when I first went, we had a good chat, and I say she was awesome because I had to give her a bit of a vision of what I thought it should be. And she fully bought into that and backed me as well. She gave me a really great budget to implement some significant changes because she knew that the savings that we could make at the back end would be so significant that that then paid for the rest of HR, essentially, you know, for all of the things that we wanted to do. And that's how I essentially see our team now. You know, we operationally make as many savings as possible as we can so that then HR, when they want to implement an initiative, a strategy, a Christmas do, whatever it might be, we're essentially paying, or we're making sure that the money's saved across the business so that then that's just a more viable option for the HR department.
David, I see what it's interesting kind of picking up on your background, because you've kind of got this marketing background, which a lot of recruiters and a lot of people in kind of maybe in TA don't really have. Yeah. So do you think that has kind of been an advantage to you to have that understanding of the marketing process? And would you kind of, do you come at recruitment from a marketing kind of standpoint?
100%. Yeah. I think that was the reason that Jane wanted me to come into Foot Asylum. I think I've always been of the mindset that you've got to capture people's imaginations before you even get to the point of them considering themselves or conceptualizing themselves in a role with your business. So that's built around effective marketing, whether that's talking about the role itself, the environment, or the opportunity that you've got. You can break it at its base level into those three things, but fundamentally they expand out into so many different drivers and facets. I mean, ultimately you, any other person, a candidate, someone that's interested in our business, they'll have their own individual drivers and ambitions. But then outside of that as well, there are people that have emotional attachment to us as a brand and all the rest of it. So it's easy for me to say with the background I've got and understanding marketing, but I do say this when I speak at a lot of events, that I do think TA sometimes overcomplicates it or makes it, they put too much pressure on their own marketing teams to have to go and create strategies to attract people to the company, when in reality, a marketing department for a business should be focusing on commercial interest, not employment interest. So I think that they're two separate things, and you need someone who, even if they don't have a marketing background, is super engaged in the idea of what it can be. I mean, to give you an idea, when I first got to Foot Asylum, we had 70 applications across 40 jobs. Last week we had 16,500 applications across 82 jobs. Mm-hmm. We've been working since I got there, and I'm not blowing smoke up my own butt, because actually I built the strategy, but my team were the ones that went out and implemented it. And again, I guess kind of like alluding to the point I made earlier, you know, I do think the things that I've done, I've been lucky. I've just been the right person at the right time. But the strategy that we did put into place, there's been a range of them, but the initial point was getting things ready in terms of like operationally. So putting an ATS system in, training my team, helping them to understand about brand management, using brand ambassadors in the company, shoehorning the commercial marketing strategy into ours. No, and then ultimately intended. As well. Sorry?
No pun intended.
No, yeah, no pun intended. Yeah. And then ultimately outside of that, then getting people, like I said, to conceptualize themselves working in the role. When we get candidates that are coming to us, I want our adverts to be written in such a way that they can already conceptualize themselves in the role. So then when they come to have a conversation with us, they're having a genuine backwards and forwards with the members of my team. I don't actually get to do most of the recruitment anymore. It's pretty sad because that's the most fun bit. But my team, I want them getting to the point where they're not having to do a sell. Like, I want to remove that element of the role itself, because like in NLP, they say about like information brokering and trust lines between parties. A candidate most certainly won't have a level of trust with you, the talent acquisition specialist, because they know that you've got a vested interest to try and bring them into the business at a subliminal level. Mm-hmm. So, but they will have with their hiring manager. So I want to make sure that we're openly aware of what that is. And actually we can get to the point where people are thinking about what impact that they could have, because I have a really easy mantra for my team, and then also from the message from my team to go out. And it's, we should be helping to create an environment where people feel that they can add value and feel valued. Now, I know that sounds really wanky and it can go different ways and people can see it in their own viewpoint. But fundamentally, if you get that right, then everything else can work its way forwards from there. And I think that's something that I'm lucky that my team really believe in it. I've got a team made up. Some of them are marketeers, some of them aren't. Some have just been in recruitment, some have worked in HR, and then some are fresh to it. And they've all really embodied the principles of, you know, employer branding, their own individual brands. They're effective at marketing. They're constantly on it. We have KPIs, not KPIs as in like I'm drilling people, but more at the end of the month when we have a check-in, like what have we done? What was our impact? Why do you think this might have worked and so on? Yeah. So they've all got individual like social strategies that are set up in place. And I think the more I speak to people that work in TA, it does surprise me how often senior TA people aren't making sure that their teams are becoming super comfortable with engagement and social strategies, because marketing to me is just as important as creating a great candidate experience and just as important as having a solid ATS system.
So when you kind of first started at Foot Asylum, you said that you were kind of pitching an employer brand. And was that kind of not in place when you kind of, when you joined? So you kind of were kind of brought in to build it. And did you do the EVP, the kind of employee value proposition and everything like that as well?
Built everything from scratch. Imagine if from like literally what I inherited was some administrators and a single recruiter. And the model at the time was if Foot Asylum's internal team made a placement, then great. But if not, we'll just use agency anyway. So the agency spend was very, very high. They were using Kanban, you know, sticky notes on whiteboards for an ATS system. CVs were being stored in, you know, like in folders that were, to be fair to them, they'd at least thought about GDPR and they were in secure formats. However, how secure, who had access to them, you know, all of the things, like they were following the basic protocols. So it was all about literally coming in and building everything from scratch, including like careers website. Like we had one, but it was like, it was essentially a portal that had been built on the commercial website. So, you know, just everything about it wasn't driving people to careers. It was driving them to go back and buy trainers and stuff. Yeah. So, you know, I built a completely new career site that's been done, designed by myself, put in, you know, obviously marketing provided all of the content and whatever, but I did all of the copy and the design and elements and layout and everything. Put in an ATS, then changed it after 2 years. That's always a challenge, but I just I felt that the original ATS that I brought in was right for a starter ATS, well-known brand, and people will use it. But I'll tell you, the brand that I'm with now is Team Taylor, because the advantage with going with Team Taylor was that they said that if there were changes that I needed to make, they could make them, and it wasn't such a big machine to move. So to give you an example, if I was to put like a social media exec job up, we'd get 600 applications in about 5 days. So the problem with that is that there's only one role, there's 599 people that are going to be disengaged and rejected. And I had a really good chat with one of my peers at another huge retail business, and he said he'd been looking into it and he felt that we had the best strategy built around it. And that's basically, we built in, with the help of Team Taylor, they really did help support it, something called Connect. And you can click into Connect and you can build out a profile. So you don't just apply for a single job. You can upload TikTok reels if you're looking to go into that space. You can tell people why you want to work there, what you know about the brand, why you're super engaged with Foot Asylum, what you feel that you can add. You can learn more about the company. You can learn some little bits about the teams and who worked where and stuff like that. So it meant that we had this touch point for what I call like the silver medal strategy, where we don't want people to feel that just because they've been rejected one time, that they didn't have an opportunity to be able to be re-engaged. Mm-hmm. Because actually, it's sometimes quite difficult, especially at the moment, actually, we're finding that application numbers are very high. So we are having to send a lot of rejections. And I think the principle, in my opinion, of how you should operate in that kind of environment is to just understand that the person that you're sending this to has feelings, emotions, might be really in emotionally attached to this role and have done all of the work because we've done so well at writing the advert and advertising it. They really have conceptualized themselves working in the job, and then they get a rejection, and that's going to be, obviously, it's really disappointing. So we just want to make sure that it's not just a disappointing end with us. We want to make sure that there's consistency about retouching and whatever else. And I would say probably our rejection pathway has been really good. I mean, we won an award a couple of years ago for when COVID happened. I built like a rejection email that included links to like mental health charities and support for people if they were struggling with pay, where they could go to if they've been made redundant, CV writing things. I just sent a massive rejection email to everybody that was in the system, and it went viral. It was getting shared all over the place. People were saying like best rejection ever and stuff. So yeah, we won an award off the back of it, and it's not the most positive, but actually it was really great to see that people really valued the fact that we were thinking about how they felt in that journey. And so we've just operated and continued on the same basis.
Yeah. And you've obviously kind of created this talent pool as well. You've got this kind of pool of kind of people that you continually engage with, whether they are an employee of Foot Asylum or whether they're not an employee of Foot Asylum. There's always in here. And do you find that, is your strategy then to go into that talent pool first place, right? Instead of kind of, you know, going out to the wider kind of social, wherever it is you're kind of trying to find, is that really now become this kind of area where you can kind of pick up some great people?
Yes, that is. But then also those individuals that have created their profile, they've set up alerts as well. So what will happen is every time that we go to post a role, they will get a notification instantly about that role being live, and they can list anything. So someone might be interested in a role in marketing, buying a merchandise and whatever else. And then once they've uploaded their skills, it will match them to some roles. So then they'll get an email, or if they wanted like a notification ping, they can get one of those, which will then send them an alert to say, this role's about to become live. Would you like to apply? Here's a link. And they get like an early option to be able to apply.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like you're doing some kind of great work though, over there at Foot Asylum. I've had a look at the careers portal myself, and it looks amazing. I can see that kind of all the kind of stuff that you've kind of put in place is obviously having an effect. You know, David, it's been absolutely kind of amazing talking to you today, to learning a bit about your journey and kind of what you've put in place at Foot Asylum. If anybody wants to kind of know more or reach out, we'll include all of your kind of details in the show notes. We'll include some links to the kind of career portals as well, so people can kind of see what great looks like. But for now, David, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. The only thing I'd like to say is if anyone ever does have any questions, I do like make myself available to help support people. I do a lot of mentoring and stuff. So if anybody would like to even just understand some basic rules about how they effectively market their talent acquisition teams and brands, then I'm more than happy to help.
Well, there you go, listeners. That's something everybody's going to should take up on. Cheers.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening. And don't forget, you can subscribe to the Marketing Rules podcast on Apple, Spotify, and all other major podcasting platforms. I've been your host, James Whitelock, and I hope you can join me and more amazing guests next time. The Marketing Rules podcast is a Think in Circles production.